Okay, here we go. We are in a new series today. We are starting a series called Seven Keys to Parenting. And you might be asking some of you, why are we doing this? And so I want to tell you some of the reasons of why we're doing a parenting type series here in our congregation. And a lot of them, actually probably more reasons than I could even begin to delineate as we have time today. But let me just throw out a couple. First of all, is that God loves kids. That's pretty clear. Bottom line, God loves kids. He made them. And he made him real cute, too. I was over at Joel and Chantel's this week and got to see Boaz, who is, 10 days old? And there he is sitting right there, hearing his first sermon. Is he listening? Sleep already. But God made, just adorable, beautiful, incredible, amazing creatures. And too bad he doesn't get that that's his grandmother playing the drums, huh? And how cool that is. He'll get it eventually. God made him. He made him just this incredible, beautiful thing. And he calls them a gift in the Bible. He encourages us to have kids if we're married. He encourages that. He calls us to protect children with some very, very strong language in the Scripture. Jesus wanted the kids to be near to him when the disciples tried to prevent children from coming close because they thought he's a big, important man. Jesus said, don't prevent them from coming close. I want the children with me. Come on, let them come. And they sat in his lap and he blessed them. And could you imagine, prayed for them? What a beautiful picture. He wanted them to be near. And Jesus so often used children as a metaphor or a model for us in our spiritual life. He said, if you want to get close to God, you got to become like a child. You need to become like the children. What does that say about the value of children? A great deal. So the bottom line is that God loves kids, and so that's why we would do something like this. Secondly, we want to talk about kids because we're going to die. Everybody sitting here, we're all going to die at some point, right? And who is going to pass on our values and our beliefs, the things that have been so important to us, if not the children that we leave behind? And that, of course, includes the physical children that we have and also spiritual children, people who follow after us in a spiritual sense. Children are very important because the things that we hold dear will be carried on through them. Number three, children, the childhood years are really the best opportunity to share faith. If something happens to us when we start to follow Jesus, something happens inside of us. We want to share what Jesus has done in our lives. We want to share what we have in this walk with Jesus Christ, this faith that we have. We want to share it with people. And a lot of times we go, oh, there's nobody to share with. I wish I had an audience or somebody that I could share with this with. Well, here we are. We got all these children in our midst. A great, perfect opportunity to share the faith with them because we know that the childhood years are the years when people are most open to learning. We get this because we train them in like their minds, right? We send them to school. We want them to have good minds and to know all the things they need to know. We train their bodies. We send them to ballet class and soccer and baseball because we want them to be able to move their bodies and physical. We try to address even their emotional side of who they are because we want them to grow up to be emotionally healthy people. But what about the spiritual side? It's absolutely critical. It's the one that's more important than all those. You get that right, and the rest start to fall into place. So it's an absolutely critical time, this is, for a person's faith, the childhood years. It's when they're most receptive. It's when they're the most formative time. And there's a little urgency on this, because the evil that's at work in this world knows also that this is the most formative time in a person's life, right? And so the evil in this world is working for a different kind of a formation in the child. And so there's an urgency about the work that we have, the window of opportunity that we have to bless children with this understanding. So children aren't just a gift, as it says, but children are a huge responsibility. And not just for the parents, but for all of us in this congregation, all of us who interact with children on whether it be a minimal basis or we're parents. And we need every available resource to throw at this awesome task of raising kids. We need every available resource. And the greatest resource in this universe is the resource of Jesus Christ. And so what we're going to do is spend some time over these next weeks figuring out and talking about how we apply the resource of Jesus Christ to parenting children. Now, some of you are saying, well, I don't have kids and all of that, and you know, you're thinking, what's this going to mean for me? Well, there's a couple things that are going to happen here. A lot of the things that we're going to be talking about apply to our lives beyond just parenting. They apply to our lives in general. In fact, God is our heavenly parent, right? And so as we learn about what it means to be a parent, what we're going to really be doing is learning a lot about God, our Father, and how He interrelates with us. And as I talked about already, there's an aspect of spiritual parenting too. Those of us who are beginning to follow Jesus Christ and we move along that path, and then somebody else is coming along and they're starting to follow Jesus Christ, and sometimes we help them through that process, we are like a spiritual parent to them. So there's lots of dynamics that are going on here. Some of us, I know, have a lot of pain and struggle, and we need to acknowledge this right up front, that parenting is one of those topics that's very difficult. Some of those painful things in my life have to do with my being parented or my trying to parent. There are all kinds of loss and pain associated with this subject. And so I want to call that out right now too. And many of us have experienced deep pain, and just to acknowledge that and say that, you know, this is really hard, and there's that part of parenting which is a struggle. And my hope and my prayer during this series is that God will bring healing where there's pain, and He'll bring hope where there's no hope, and He'll bring change where there needs to be change, and He'll bring, you know, just all kinds of things that we can't imagine as we go through this process, as we step out in faith and take a little bit of risk and address this topic together. So we're going to dive right in because I had to kind of introduce the series. I'm not going to introduce this particular study that we're going to be going through too much. We're going to dive right in. And we're going to talk about what the goal of parenting is. That's going to be our subject, our introduction for today. What's the goal of parenting? If we're going to talk about how you parent, then we need to talk about what we're trying to accomplish in the process of parenting. We need to understand what it means to parent. I'm going to throw out a little bit of a straw man here. I'm going to say that parenting is about this. Parenting is about nurturing hearts for Jesus. Nurturing hearts for Jesus Christ. Now, for Jesus Christ, that part, what I mean by that, nurturing a heart that's open to Jesus Christ, open to receiving Jesus Christ, that is, as they get older, dedicated to Jesus Christ, focused on pleasing Jesus Christ, serving Jesus Christ, etc., etc., etc. That's the goal of our parenting, is to nurture hearts for Jesus. Now, I could have said, nurture hearts for God, and I could have said it that way, but I wanted to be clear that as we go through this, as we journey this together, we're going to be coming at this from a Christian perspective. We're going to be looking at what the Christian Bible says about nurturing hearts for Jesus Christ. So we're going to take that particular angle on it because of who we are and because of what we believe. And I know that some of you might be here this morning and you're maybe interested in the nurturing hearts part, but you haven't figured out the Jesus part yet. You're not sure if you want to follow Jesus Christ, and you're sort of wrestling with that question yourself and trying to struggle through that and understand that. And that's great. That's absolutely okay. And there are going to be a lot of principles that are involved in this series that will apply to you and that you will find very helpful. The only thing I would ask is that in the process, you would open your heart to considering building a relationship with Jesus Christ as well, as you consider becoming a better parent. I think those two can dovetail very nicely. So, here we go, nurturing hearts for Jesus. And I want to talk about the heart, first of all. I think this is where we need to start as we talk about the goal of parenting, and that goal being nurturing hearts for Jesus. I want to say that the heart really matters to God. Hearts matter to God much more than we often give credit. I think we've misunderstood this. In our personal cares, we just think about caring for ourselves. We oftentimes think that there are so many other things that are more important than the heart. You know, whether it be your bank account or your social status or your reputation or whatever, go on and on and on. And what God says in no uncertain terms is that what He really cares about in the person is the heart. Well, what is the heart? Let's kind of define our terms here. The Bible talks about the heart all over the place. And, of course, the Bible is not a textbook like your science textbook or something, so it doesn't give you a glossary in the back that says this is exactly, precisely what the heart is. If God wrote a book like that, it would probably be so big we'd never be able to read it if He explained everything in that kind of detail. So He accommodates Himself to us, and He uses these kind of metaphors to explain what a human being is, and one of the primary ones has to do with the heart being at the very core of a person. A lot of people have associated the heart with the will, The heart is like the will. It's the activistic, decision-making part of the human being. If the human being were a corporation, thankfully it's not, but if the human being were a corporation, the heart would be the CEO. The heart would be the CEO, the chief executive officer, the one at the center who's sort of making the decisions. Information is being fed from vice presidents and what have you of the organization, and then there's a decision process going on, activistic process. If, for you who are into computers, if the human being were a computer, the heart would be the central processing unit, the CPU. And what the CPU does, and I hope I don't totally butcher this, but what the CPU does, as I understand it, takes software and uses that software to help make decisions. So there's software feeding into the CPU. The CPU is making decisions on the information that it's getting because the software is telling it how to make those decisions. So it's the activistic part. It's the part that's doing the processing, but it's shaped by what's fed into it. I'm looking at my computer guys right now, and they're not totally shaking their heads. So it's a CPU kind of thing. If the human being were a football team, the heart would be the quarterback, okay? The coaches are speaking to the quarterback, but the quarterback is also looking at what's happening on the field at that moment and making decisions, getting all this input, but has to make the final decision right at the time of the snap. So the heart would be the quarterback if the human beings were a football team. And so feeding into our hearts, we've got these feedbacks from the different aspects of who we are, because the Bible also tells us that we consist of, we're body and we have mind and we have emotions and we have social interactions. And all of those parts of who we are feed into the heart, kind of like the vice presidents give information to the CEO, or the software tells the CPU how to function, and the quarterback gets the assistant coach's information. All these things, the emotions, the social interactions, the mind, the desires and the wants of our physical bodies, these feed into the heart, and they shape the heart, and then the heart acts on that. So the heart is very, very important, and it's why what we take into ourselves through our sight, through our reading, through our intake of media, etc., those kinds of things matter because they feed into the heart and shape the heart. So it's very important. That's what we talk about, understanding our intake, because the heart is at the center. It's almost like the bottom of a funnel, and everything's going down into it. And then out of that comes decisions and action and the will. So the heart is the very center. The Bible talks about the heart nonstop. I think there's something like 570 instances of the use of that word, the heart, throughout the Bible. There's too much to highlight. We're not going to go through all 570 of them here this morning. But I want to highlight just a few of those instances. And the one where you hopefully are turned on page 128, Deuteronomy 6:5. I'm not sure if I called that out before. Deuteronomy 6:5 gives us a kind of a heading to begin to talk about the importance of the heart and what the Bible places on the heart. It says this: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Now, Jesus will affirm this statement as being basically the vision for how a person should live. He will affirm this in each gospel, and the wording of it is sometimes different. But in every case, it starts off with love the Lord your God with all your heart. The heart is the first one that's mentioned. It's the primary one that's mentioned in that. So then we look through, going a little bit further through the Old Testament, and we can put some of these up for you as we go through it. And what I'm doing here is I'm building a case that God really cares about the heart. That's what God cares about more than just about anything else. When Saul, who was the king of Israel, was failing, God described through Samuel why he was failing. And he said this: but now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. See? And appointed him leader of his people, because you have not kept the Lord's command. And then when he found the person that he wanted to replace Saul, David, he said this about him. David was just a sort of scrawny little guy who was the youngest in the family, and they thought the big, more developed, studly kind of guys in the family would certainly be the ones who'd be chosen as king, and they weren't. And this is the reason why. It says, but the Lord said to Samuel was the prophet choosing the one who'd be king, as he listened to God, Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. That's talking about one of David's big brothers, who was, you know, this stud. He said, the Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The chief qualification for David becoming king was his heart. Where was his heart? Move on a little bit. There's a king later on whose name is Josiah, and he gets a special blessing. And it says the reason he gets that special blessing is because his heart was responsive to God. Go on a little bit further. You go into the Proverbs. Proverbs 27:19. As water reflects a face, so a man's heart reflects the man. Proverbs 4:23. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Then Jesus said this, Matthew 5:8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. I want to see God. And then going further through the New Testament, the message of God's grace, the gospel, Jesus says, is sown where? In the heart. That's where it comes in. It's sown in the heart. When choosing the apostles after Judas, you know, kind of went his way and betrayed Jesus, and they needed to find a replacement apostle, they prayed and they said this, Lord, you know everyone's heart. The chief qualification for the replacement was his heart. And they didn't know how to read a person's heart. So they prayed that God would give them direction and understanding about the person's heart, who they should choose. That was the primary concern. In Hebrews, the manner in which we draw near to God is with a sincere heart. Am I making a case here that God cares about the heart? In heaven, what does it say about how heaven will be? It says that God's laws will be written on our hearts. That's a beautiful picture. That's a time when our heart is melded with the heart of God. They've become one. They exist together. And what we want, the decisions we want to make, our will is perfectly aligned with God's will. We don't have to kind of, you know, struggle with that anymore, because we're aligned with God in this beautiful union. That's where we're headed. And the more we can head that way now, the better. God cares about the heart. That's what he cares about. It's not our skill. It's not our bank accounts or any other kind of account. It's not our reputations. It's not our class, rank. It's not our salary. Those aren't the things that God cares about. What he cares about most, he does care about those things, I should say, but what he cares about most is the heart. That's where the primary emphasis is in the Scripture. And it's really tempting to think, you know, when you have children or you're working with children, if I could just make these kids smart enough, or I can just figure out how to make sure that these kids are wealthy enough, or they have a good enough reputation, or they're beautiful enough, then they'll be able to find bliss and happiness in this life. And that's not what the Bible says. It's about the heart. It's about the heart. That's the key. Some of us fall on the other side. We say, well, you know, I'm going to just let things take care of themselves, and I'm just going to provide food and shelter for the kids and let everything happen. And that's not okay either, because that doesn't necessarily result in the shaping of the heart. So we can't fall off on either one of those sides. What God cares about is the heart. And the focus that we're to have is on the heart and letting the rest take shape. The heart matters to God. And so we transition to the next point, and we've already begun to do so. Since the heart matters to God, the heart ought to matter to parents as well. That ought to be where we place our primary focus. The goal of parenting is to nurture the heart towards God. Again, if you look in Deuteronomy 6 with me, 4, we're going to read a little bit further. We're going to see how this plays out, this whole parenting side now, mattering to God and to parents, the heart. Okay, Deuteronomy 6, 4. We already read this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your, now by now you know what I'm going to say, hearts. Good. And then verse 7, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. See, the parent, the job of the parent is to shepherd the heart towards the things of God. Proverbs outlines this in many ways. We can't cover them all, but in the book of Proverbs, you've got this parent-child relationship, which is the focus of the book, and it's all centered around this idea of heart development. Proverbs 6:20 says, "My son, keep your father's commands and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them upon your heart forever. Fasten them around your neck." Proverbs 4:3. "When I was a boy in my father's house, still tender and an only child of my mother, he taught me and said, 'Lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live.'" And then we've already read this one, Proverbs 4:23. "Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." And I was thinking about that one a little bit further, and I wondered to myself, well, the heart is the wellspring of life. That's pretty strong language. So it needs to be protected, it needs to be guarded. But how can a child guard his own heart or her own heart? A child can't do that. Just like a child can't guard him or herself from running into the street or knowing how to cross a street, a child can't do that. And that's why God has given parents to guard the child's heart until they're ready to guard it themselves. Very critical. It's our call to nurture the heart for God so that the person, when they grow up, can connect to Jesus and to become, can become who God has originally intended them to be. That's the goal of parenting, and that's what we're called to do. My dad did a lot of things really well. One of the things that he didn't do so well was teach me how to ride a bike. And if he were here this morning, he would fully admit that that's the case. I learned to ride a bike like 2 years after all my friends had already learned how to ride a bike. And we lived on a hill, and my dad took me out on the driveway, and it was a big old bike that was quite a bit too big for me. And I still remember his yellow bike, kind of banana seat. And he set me on this bike, and he just sent me down the hill. And I got going faster and faster and faster. And I started to do all the things that I could think of to stop this bike. The first thing I thought of was to scream "Daddy" at the top of my lungs as many times. Because a lot of times in life, up to that point, that had worked to save me from difficult circumstances. But it didn't work this time. And so as I gathered speed, I thought, well, I'll go up the curb because that will help me slow down. So I raced up the curb. But you know what? It didn't slow me down. I just kept going down this hill. And then my neighbor's yard down at the bottom, towards the bottom of the street, approached. And I thought, I'll ride. They had a big hill in it. I thought, I'll ride up this hill and it'll slow me down. But I was going so fast that I rode right up the hill and back down the other side. And then I was going even faster than when I started. And so the only option I had left was the one thing I knew that would stop me, a parked car. And so I came off of my neighbor's yard, and I went out into the street, and boom, right into the parked car. And my dad comes running down the hill, and I'm like a big giant mosquito on the windshield at this point. And he gets the squeegee and cleans me off and carries me back into the house. And we waited for another day to continue the biking lesson. It was a very traumatic experience for me. And I think that's why I'm so into cycling to this day. I'm still trying to overcome that original experience that I had on the bike. So here's the thing, though. Many of us, I think our spiritual journey is kind of like that. That the journey of learning how to relate to God and developing the spiritual side of who we are is kind of like that bike ride. You know, maybe our parents did some great stuff in some of their areas, or you know, and so we're still struggling under that traumatic experience and that failure and that not growing up and understanding and being given the tools to engage with God in the way that we can. And one of my neighbors recently bought one of those little wooden bikes for his son, who's 3 or 4, I think. Or, I don't know, 3? Is he 5? Okay, 5. It's this great little thing. It's a wooden bike, and it has no pedals on it. And you put the kid on there, and they can touch the ground with their legs, and they just sort of skid along, and they go up and down the sidewalk, and they learn how to balance before they ever learn how to pedal. And I look at that thing and I just go, why has it taken us so long to figure out that's how you teach a kid how to ride a bike? You don't put them on a bike with training wheels. It's not like they need to learn how to pedal first. They need to learn how to balance first. That's the right order of things. And it's so beautiful to see this kid going up and, you know, I look at him and I just go, I'm so glad he doesn't have to suffer like I did in learning how to ride a bike. You know, he goes up and down the street and he's happy and joyful and there's no trauma involved. And it's just a great experience. And I'm here to say, and I want to say this throughout this series, that our spiritual development can be like that too. We can give children that kind of spiritual development. It doesn't have to be traumatic, put them on the bike, send them down the hill, crash into the parked car. We can do this in a way. God has given us the tools to help kids come to know their Maker and to develop their hearts in ways that are sensible and realistic and beautiful and wonderful. It doesn't have to be like that. And in this book, this incredible book, God has given us tools on how to do that. I think of this a lot like the image of a shepherd, you know. The child's heart is like a little sheep, you know. And we're, as shepherds of the heart, we care for the heart. It's not our heart. It belongs to the owner, okay? The child belongs to God. But we've been given responsibility to care for the child while it's in our custody. And what we want to do is we want to, you know, build the proper fence around the child to protect from harm. We want to feed the child the things that the child needs to be nourished and to water the child. We want to speak to the child to lead them in the way that they should go. And at the end of it, we want to take this little sheep that doesn't belong to us but that we've been caring for and hand it over to its owner and say, here it is. I took care of this heart for you because I want this heart to be in your presence and to belong to you. That's what this process is about. And that's what we're going to be looking at over these coming weeks, is how do you take a child's heart and shepherd the heart towards God? That's our study for the next weeks. And the interesting thing that is going to happen, I think, with this is a lot of the things that we talk about really apply to all kinds of relationships. And so, again, if you're not directly parenting, you're done parenting, you haven't started parenting, you don't think parenting is going to be a part of your life, a lot of the principles that we're going to be talking about are going to apply to your life in many different ways as we go through this. These are things that God spoke for us in all relationships. And what I've been doing over the past year or so is I've been keeping notes because, you know, I have kids who range in the age from 11 to 4. And so I have like a little laboratory for this right in my house. And so I've been keeping notes on things that have happened, and I've been writing down experiences and challenges and struggles and lots of failures on my part, and to keep notes of what's going on. And then at the same time, I've been keeping notes of scriptures that are important for this sort of this whole concept of parenting. You know, what kinds of scriptures speak to this, and what do we need? And then I've been reading as many books as time has permitted on the subject of parenting. And so with those things, I've been kind of triangulating here and figuring out what are the things that we can do as parents and people who are influencing kids to shepherd their hearts towards God. And we're going to look at five different tools that we have, things that we can do. So much of parenting feels totally out of control because so many things you can't control. But what are some things that we can do, some things that we can control? And I've isolated five of them here. We're going to talk about instructing, just like Deuteronomy 6:5 says. We're going to talk about speaking, how you speak and communicate with children. Absolutely critical. We're going to talk about discipline. Absolutely critical. We're going to talk about sheltering kids. This is not one that I had in there originally, but as I think about it more and as I've been doing some reading, it's a very important aspect of raising children. And we're going to talk about my favorite one, I think so important and oftentimes so missed. We're going to talk about delighting in children. One of the most critical things that we can do for a child is to delight in him or her, to have the eyes light up when they come around the corner, you know, to be pleased when they just do the smallest thing, to shower that love. And these things are all interrelated. If you don't get the discipline right, then you can't delight because you're so frustrated all the time that you can't, when they come around the corner, you just think, "Urgh!" You know? And you they see that. And so these things are totally interrelated. And instruction obviously involves speaking, but not all forms of communication are tied together like that. And so we're going to see how all these interrelate. And so I just want to close quickly here with a few suggestions. And this is to prepare us for what's coming, okay? We need to be prepared. As parents, future parents, past parents, friends of kids, teachers, single people who have relationship with children, here's what we need to do. We need to make sure that our life is about the heart. We need to make sure that our lives are about having hearts for Jesus Christ. Because how can we expect children to have that when we don't? We need to make sure, we need to make certain that who we are is more important than what we do. We need to live by that principle. Who we are is more important than what we do. It's an incredible principle. I was watching the HBO series on John Adams, which is a great series. And in that series, they describe the relationship between John Adams and his second son. And he did not delight in that second son. Now, I don't know if this is accurate in terms of the real John Adams, so we don't know. But in the series, the TV series, it's this horrible relationship where he doesn't delight in the son. And the reason is because his first son does a lot of great things, right? He's the one who became president eventually. His second son doesn't do a lot of great things. And in the movie portrayal, what he cares about is what he does, not who he is. And so he's always disappointed with this son. And in the end, it's this horrible outcome where the son becomes an alcoholic and he dies of alcoholism, and this horrible scene at the very end where they're interacting and John Adams walks away from him and he just says, I want to have nothing left to do with you because you haven't done what I wanted you to do. That's not what we need to be about. We need to be about who. Where's the heart? Okay? So we're going to talk about that some more. We need to get that figured out for us first. We also are going to need a good dose of humility. You know, we put all this effort into raising children or teaching children or being nice to children, and it's a lot of strain and struggle and stress, and, you know, we hate to think that we could be wrong after all that work, right? It's really hard, and pride is a defense mechanism to keep us from having to address some painful things, and we need to let go of that. We need to be humble and say, look, we're all going to learn, we're all going to grow, we're all going to be we're all going to struggle, we're all going to be taught and stretched is the word I'm looking for. And then lastly, we need to believe that change can happen. We need to believe that change can happen in the way we relate to kids. You know, the cliche is often, you know, in the Christian world, kind of like, okay, you know, God first, and my marriage second, and my family third, and my work fourth. You know, that's how my life is organized. And a lot of us who have kind of been in the Christian world for a while, we can say that. But to actually live that is another thing. I personally have found that incredibly challenging at times to live that order of things. I'm a go-getter, driving, doer, ministry-obsessed, focused kind of guy. And, sometimes it's really hard for me to make the transition when I come home and to be the person that I need to be or even to be there enough in the past. And I've had some incredibly painful moments where I've looked at some of my friends and they just seem to have this natural just ability to do that and to have that be the focus of their lives. And I know I should be that way, and it's been a struggle for me at times. And I'm telling you this because I want to say to you that God has power to bring about change, and he's done that in my life. 5 years ago, I never would have known or believed that I could be in the place where I am now. I still have so far to go. But in the amount of time that God has opened up or changed me to spend with my kids. I mean, these days in the morning, I get up and, you know, 6 o'clock, I have devotional with my son, first off, just the two of us. And then I have my own little time, and then my two daughters get up, and I get a devotional with them. We have to start early to get all this in. And, we're going through Esther, and it's been great. And my son and I are going through Proverbs. And then we become, by God's grace, we become more regular in the evening with our meal time, and then having that devotional time afterwards. And God has changed my heart so that, you know, I'm delighting in my children. You know, we were just down in San Diego, and I love to surf. And I was sitting there, I thought, you know, I could get my surfboard and go out on the beach, or I could stay here in the water and help my kids, you know, learn how to ride the bodyboard. And it was no contest. just the joy of seeing their delight and being present with them. And I'm not trying to say, what I'm trying to give testimony is God's power to change, because that's not necessarily the natural me. And God is good, and He's been gracious. And I look forward to more and more of that kind of change. And we all have different areas where we struggle and where this has become hard. Maybe we don't have enough energy sometimes, or maybe we get frustrated easily, or like me, I struggle with patience. And I just want us to end remembering God has power to bring change where there needs to be change. Okay, so let's go into this with hope and faith, because we have a good God who's big and awesome and powerful and wonderful, and He loves us very, very much. Now, done some extra things this morning, and so we're going to have a time of communion.